There are moments where I think that that is a step in a process. You know,
sure.
That okay, the step, you know, there's the first step to say, oh, here, this is an illusion. This is a control system, and I've lived my life in someone else's game. I've lived my life in, you know, I saw someone had put just this, you know, little icon on Facebook the other day. It was really funny. It was like, you know, our debt is fake, our money's fake, our food is fake, you know, all these different things. It's like, then you wonder why life, you know, anything outside of that seems like you're told it's not real. It's like these, you know, everything around us, mainstream society accepts as real, is actually all kind of bogus. And all these other things that we're told are either hocus pocus or imagination or where, you know, whatever, you know, gets slung at us, whether that's for the conspiracy crowd or the esoteric crowd, because I've received sort of the criticism on both ends. You know, if I talk conspiracy to someone, they say, oh, you're just paranoid. If I talk esotericism to somebody, it's like, you know, oh, you've got an active imagination, or you're, you know, these different things, you know. So,
and yet everyone is still terrified right along with you, saying, what the hell is really going on? I don't know. Everybody feels uncertain. Everybody feels like waiting for the inevitable shoe to drop. Anything, you know what I mean? It's like,
or they're not worried at all, and they're just, saying like, hey, what are you worried about? Come on, let's go to McDonald's and
let's go shopping.
Yeah, let's go out to the bar and charge it on our credit card and let's keep partying. You know, let's keep the machine rolling. What's your problem? Why are you rocking the boat?
and the artificiality of our society is a double-edged sword that has served the greater purpose of creating more uncertainty. Because it's like, you know, you're right. There's so much that is not real, whether it be specific physical products that we think are real, because it's really, a lot of these things, it's all about the emotional attachment of the acquisition. It's not really. It's just like in that THX 1138, the first movie by Lucas. You ever seen that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, the dendrites that they buy. It's a perfect example. They buy dendrites. What are they buying? They're buying, like, platonic solids, right? All these different shapes, right? That's all they are. They're just like a hexagonal shape, and they call them dendrites, right? So it's the perfect commentary on our society. It's like consumerism, even in this completely controlled reality. I mean, down to the very every... How are you feeling when you open the cabinet door? You know, it's like they still are consuming. They're still like, don't feel right unless they go in and get some dendrites. You know what I mean? It's like that's part of his process of trying to find, like, you know, balance was to go buy some dendrites, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I see it with... You know, look at Brave New World, where there's like the kids are taught from an early age. You know, we used to say like a stitch in time saves nine. There's an expression in Brave New World that I don't remember exactly what it is, but it's like, you know, basically like, you know, throw it away and buy another one. I don't remember what the exact like rhyme is, obviously. But
the point is made.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the imprinting on the psyche, going along with like cultural folklore almost, by using like a little rhyming thing, like a fairy tale or a children's nursery rhyme.
But at least, I guess my thing was, at least we used to have the rhyme to make you remember something is, you know, a stitch in time saves nine is like, you know, take care of, you know, if you have clothing, you know, as a human being going out, you know, if you need this clothing, which, you know, that could be argued if we want to, oh, I don't know if we all want to become nudists tomorrow, but, you know, we could probably say clothing is not necessary, but I don't know that I'm not necessarily advocating for a nudist planet.
That's a drastic digression, but anyways.
Well, just to say that, like, you know, because that could be seen as unnecessary also, but I guess my point was that, you know, to say to take care of something you don't need to spend needlessly, but if you had clothing, you know, there was a hole in your sock or your pants or whatever, stitch it up, and you can keep that going. So that you were, you know, your resources went to more important things, you know, your family, your food, and so on. And now we have everything where, you know, people go to Target or Walmart and they buy a T-shirt for $3 that falls apart after being in the laundry two times, and they go, oh, well, it was only $3, let's go buy another one.
Totally.
And that's what I'm kind of getting at. It's like we've lost this idea of, hey, you know, we don't have to just act like locusts eating up resources and ultimately it's not, you know, whether you want to take that from an environmental standpoint of pouring through resources or from a, you know, hey, we're being suckered by companies to give them money every 2 weeks.
And you know, let's take it to the next level of that is that it was required for our individual and collective consciousnesses to view things in that way, with an impermanence, mm-hmm. with a sense of obsolescence that's just part of reality, don't worry about it, and see the result. That's what you're really getting at, Alan. See the result in our world around us, the way we've crapped all over it, you know, the way we've we're destroying the, you know, like what part of it we can impact, we are having a bad impact. You know, I know for a fact, I don't care who says what, if you want to argue about, like, you know, global warming and human impact or whatever, say what you will, right? The Gulf of Mexico is all screwed up, and it was man who did it. You know what I mean? And, like, that Fukushima thing that happened over there in the Pacific, you know, that's a big, bad mistake that man did. You know, it's not nature, per se.
Sure.
Although we're a part of nature, certainly.
Yeah, I guess my only sort of, I guess my devil's advocate thing against that would be, you know, but in time, the same way that the planet, you know, as a whole, has had cataclysms before, and species may die off, but other species will continue. As human beings, we could end up destroying ourselves, but nature, you know, the world's gonna keep spinning.
Yeah.
And you know, cockroaches will survive through radiation, and you know, we might have bug planet, but nature is not really gonna shrug if we're gone like the dinosaurs. That was all. Just to say, like, I totally get your point. I just want to say that.
Yeah, the point was made, definitely. Yeah. But anyways, before I know we're getting near the end of the time here, and I wanted to say a couple more things just to let everybody know, to remind them. Yeah, Sean David Morton's coming on this weekend on my show, and also up real close in the near future, we're gonna have Nick Redfern on to talk about pyramids and the Pentagon.
Oh,
which,
awesome!
Oh yeah, yeah, that's an excellent book that, you know, I'm really excited about having to come on and talk about. And and also, I wanted to say, you know, we have the makings for a real alternative media network forming in our little corner of the web, New Thought Underground, you know, with folks like Freeman over at thefreemantv.com and a host of friends that are all talented and creative people that are connected with thefriendshipagenda.com and, you know, courtesy Illuminated One over at Occult Science Radio and The Occult Network and you guys at SyncBook. We're all connecting and forming a synergy, I think, that's occurring. And I really see a potential in the future, you know, and I'm just really excited about it. The Illuminated One over at Occult Science Radio and Steve McManus from Forbidden America Radio are starting their own East Coast server network to provide stream for any of us independent broadcasters and media content providers, so we can have, like, commercial free, totally uncensored, you know, stream access to the internet to broadcast. And we can talk about that with Curtis as well.
That's awesome.
I just
want to tell everyone listening, and you, and you know, just tell you as well, but the interview you did recently with Curtis I thought was really fantastic, and I want to encourage anybody, if you were interested in the subjects that we discussed today of the secret war inside Freemasonry and just sort of getting some more kind of background knowledge on the structure, I thought you did an amazing job in, you know, less than an hour to really dig into a lot of this material. And I just thought that was a great interview. So I really highly recommend it.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. And then it's also, I was on with Bob from Cincinnati on a cult Empire, which is anti-matter zone broadcasting over at Blog Talk Radio for anybody that wants to check out. So both Occult Science Network, the Occult Science Radio Show, and Occult Empire are both on Blog Talk Radio. So if you go there, you'll find them both. And that was a two-hour show, by the way, last week with him.
Oh, fantastic. I want, before we go, you and I should, I think we should do a little sort of announcement and a sort of offer to the people listening. Do you want to talk about synchro fiction?
Absolutely. And I would definitely think it's a great idea to invite folks. We have a blog that I set up, was inspired with, well, basically, you know, for a long time on the internet, there's been the concept of flash fiction. It's been for internet magazines, you know, trying to fill the page, you know, they would accept small little, what they call flash fiction pieces of prose, even poetry, but prose mostly. And it was 750 words or less. And so that's been going on for a while, you know, since the 90s, since the internet started really coming on board. But I thought, wow, that'd be a great idea to create a blog where we could invite folks to participate in a, like a literary experiment, which is what I would call synchro fiction. And basically the idea was from, inspired by the book you guys put out, the Think Book, and looking at synchromysticism and synchronicity, but combining it with the idea of what I called streampunk. And this is a concept that's distinct from steampunk. And you can go to the website, which is synchrofiction.blogspot.com, to check out the definition there and learn about the, you know, what I mean by when I say streampunk. But it's basically the idea of a cyber-based tale. So with steampunk as a subgenre, you have tales of alternate, it's an alternate reality, Victorian futurism of like steam engines and, you know, things of this nature. Well, with streampunk, it's an alternate reality where, you know, synchro fiction is a realized aspect of reality, it may be. And we're all, you know, there's more of a transhumanist agenda manifested in reality in the form of people, you know, engaging in cybernetic reality with their internets and their devices and stuff. So it could be anything along those lines. It's something, you know, within that framework. And so, yeah, also I was thinking, Alan, we ought to invite people to submit art too, like CG art that would, you know, could be a visual expression of this idea.
So, oh, that's a great idea. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wanted to put that out there. Any artists out there that want to send in, now you can send it to my, email, which is freighterxfreezone@gmail.com. Again, the submission guidelines and everything are at the website, which is synchrofiction.blogspot.com.
And what I, you know, when I had discussed this with you, I mean, you told me that you had put this blog up. We had a conversation recently, and I just want to sort of let everyone know what we were thinking, was that if people submitted this material to you, you're gonna post it on the blog spot and start to collect sort of these submissions. And if we get a collection here, what as Sinkful Press, what I'd like to do is sort of come in, and then we can take some of the best pieces that are submitted, and we can make an anthology out of it and actually publish a printed anthology of the best synchro fiction that you compile. And I think that would be a wonderful sort of joint venture for you and I to work on. And I really encourage anyone listening to, if that appeals to it all, then please submit, and please, you know, we've been talking about the war inside consciousness, or the war on our consciousness. I don't want to say to one, please submit. It seems like a tricky word.
I know. I thought the same thing a moment ago when I said it. I was like, I didn't like that either. I was like, how can I put this contribute? Please put forth your work for our assessment. I don't know.
We're trapped in linguistic.
Totally.
You know?
Limited by.
Yeah. So, but I ask everyone to please, you know, share your information, share your fiction with us, and
share. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to say one little aside. There is an excellent essay with regards to language called "The Politics of Language," written by George Orwell. So anybody wants to check that out, it talks about the whole way that we are trapped within our language.
Oh, and we see it every day. I mean, how many times? I don't know about you. I feel like the internet really sort of solidified that idea for me, because when we're so used to talking face to face, and you have facial expressions, and if you're, you know, like me, you have a lot of hand gestures and things like that, but just different inflection, tone, all these different things that add extra context, and that, you know, really carries the language to a finer detail. But when I feel all the time, like, you put something on the internet, and, you know, even as a writer who I would like to think, oh, I'm clear in what I say, How many times have you been misunderstood in an email or something you wrote where there's no tonality there, it's just, you know, text on a screen, and particularly the way people process it. You know, I think it's different if you're reading a novel, you're going to be open to different interpretations and you're not thinking that person is, you know, judging you or attacking you. But when it's an email, sometimes there's a lot of misunderstanding, and we see how easily the language sort of very, very tricky. It's a really slippery thing, and that's, I find a lot of these conversations, why we feel the need to sort of clarify things. That's ultimately, I like a lot of these, when you say about submitting artwork or imagery, you know, there's the idea that a picture's worth 1,000 words. It's true. There's a video that's going viral right now. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called I Pet Goat. Have you seen
No, I haven't.
And as I see, like, all these different sites talking about this, and, you know, everyone's, it's sort of an I think partially abstract. Basically, it seems like a conspiracy theorist a video of showing, you know, George Bush being controlled by puppet strings and, you know, bankers and all these sort of, like, you know, evil shadow masters. And at the same time, it's filled with occult imagery, but, you know, not necessarily saying that this is an occult power structure. It's just the imagery is there. So different people, I think it's so open for interpretation that I've seen, like, Vigilant Citizen, who I fucking hate Vigilant Citizen. I'm just going to go on record here and say, like, what is that, that guy? I try not to do that, but... You know, he lays out this whole thing where he's explaining the symbolism within it and saying blah, 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 and then it ends with, like, but this is probably representing the Antichrist, and it's a, and it just brings it right back to, like, and there's this external control that you should be afraid of. What he's saying, all the imagery in there is showing how you can liberate yourself from these, both the physical and spiritual trappings, and then he ends it with, of course, this proposed freeing yourself from the spiritual and physical trappings could in itself be a trap by the Antichrist. It's like, really? Like, did you even read what you wrote?
Oh, I'm with you, man. It grates on me, that kind of dismissiveness, and then the oversimplification, even on the positive side. You'll get people that are, like, you know, mean, well-intentioned, and they're not trying to slander, but they are literally providing misinformation as far as I'm concerned. When you limit a thing to, like, one explanation or one definition, when some things don't have just one simple explanation, there's a lot of things to consider. And, you know, that's not, you know, that's missed in the equation, but
yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, no, I definitely see it on the positive side, too. People are like, oh, this is all flowers and, you know, oh, look how this is. And it's like, well, actually, you know, like, my thing is, I there's a lot of things that I see that are really dark out there. And...
Oh, that's the other thing I wanted to say, is that people deliberately are reactionary, too. They love to engage people's emotions. And like you said, maybe that's what you're trying to... I don't know, if I haven't watched the iPad Go, but it sounds like that's the kind of thing that that's doing. It's like a reactionary, you know, it's engaging us on an emotional level without rationality. So it's got that's the base kind of manipulative level of thinking that we're really best, you know, led in. You know, we're best manipulated in that state.
Oh, sure. I think that's an incredibly fair statement. I think the possibility's there. But I don't, like I said, I didn't actually take it that way. My thing was, I thought it was open enough for interpretation that there was something that, you know, I was like, I don't know if I agree with this. I don't know if it seems like there's a political message that I don't know if I necessarily agree with. There are things that I do like. There are things that I don't like. And yet, that was, to me, the sign of, like, good artwork, if it makes me think. You know, we're so afraid of thinking.
I think that I agree. I think the fear that comes to a lot of people, and I mean, I'm speculating and projecting, I think, but I honestly suspect that a lot of people fear being exposed for not knowing. You know, they don't want to be exposed as not knowing. And if you put out an interpretation of a thing, you're taking a chance that you're going to be exposed for not really knowing what you're talking about. So it's best to just use discretion and not offer any interpretation, you know?
Or be the charlatan and say, you know, that you put, you know, you're the vigilant citizen that says, here, I'm going to show you what this video really means. I know.
Yeah, he's accepting somebody else's thought and offering it as truth. You know what I mean? And that's silly. I mean, that's, like you said, that's the ultimate sheeple. You know, that's the ultimate act of, being a follower, you know, and then reinforcing a paradigm that is, you know, it's a thought-stopping paradigm, that whole dynamic, like you said, oh, let's look at all this stuff, and then at the very end, right before we close, let's just totally denounce and destroy it in the last 5 seconds, you know, and you see that a lot with the same kind of, what they really want is to just have people pay attention to them. It doesn't matter what the substance of what they say is, because all they really wanted was to be paid attention to.
That's true.
You know,
but I'd like to take this in a direction that I'm sure you've experienced this. As someone who deals with occult imagery, and I would assume for a guy in the conspiracy realm who's saying, I'm a Freemason, I like Masonic, you know, I want to make a distinction. There's a Scottish Rite that's a political false system, and yet there's a true lineage here that you really admire. I feel like you're probably used to getting the same thing that I'm talking about. Of like, people just want to take a very broad brush and say, well, that's all occult, or that's all Masonic, and it's all just evil. And that you can just so quickly dismiss it as such. And I wonder if you would speak to that at all, if you're comfortable, as someone who, you know, is certainly within this sort of conspiracy realm. Have you encountered that, and how have you sort of navigated that? I imagine that must be something.
It's been crazy. First of all, let me say that my entire life I've felt like an outsider in one way or another. Really, I mean, you know, because like I've said on other shows, I've always been interested in something or things that many and most other people are not were not interested in until recently, you know. But so you spend a long time feeling like you just kind of go to a different, you march to a different beat than everybody else. And the reason why I bring that up is because that is an overarching, like, process, I think, for me growing up. I was constantly finding myself in a position where I was on the outside, and there was the majority was going one direction, and I was like, hey, wait a second, that doesn't seem right to me, you know. And I mean, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that statement, but to get more and more specific with it, it's something that I experienced even within Masonry. What really led me to the path that eventually became this whole project of the secret war inside Freemasonry was being marginalized within Freemasonry, was being, you know, almost punished for my exceptionalism, because the process that I speak of is one that, like, Ayn Rand laid out in The Fountainhead or one of those books. She said that we stifle excellence and celebrate mediocrity. And this is the ultimate collectivism, you know, to stifle excellence and celebrate mediocrity, you know, and that's what's going on, because when we celebrate mediocrity, you end up with obedience, because those who are mediocre, they, you know, human consciousness knows when it doesn't know. It knows what it doesn't know, or that it doesn't know. It knows that. And there's a certain sense of shame that builds up in the mind that knows that it doesn't know, but other people are saying you're an authority on a thing, you know? And so you have that, the moral dilemma, do I keep up with the charade, or do I admit that I don't know? You know, so my point, I know I've kind of digressed a little bit, but within Masonry, I felt that sense of suspicion and derision, because I called bullshit on things. You know, I stood up in the first year of my time in the lodge and read a paper I wrote called The Decline and Fall of Freemasonry, and where I talked about the Morgan Affair and talked about how the charity had been turned away from the Brotherhood and to the public in order to just be a big giant PR campaign. And it was we were no longer living up to our obligations as Freemasons and taking care of the brothers around us. And that was met with like the most awkward silence you could ever imagine after I read that paper. And that was as a first year Master Mason in a brand new lodge, you know, that I had just joined. So I've always kind of caused trouble in that way. So yeah, in the conspiracy movie, I mean, right away, as soon as I took over as the host of Freeman's show for 8 weeks on the Free Zone, I was definitely attacked on the chat lines. I was even my co-host at the time was so adamantly anti-Masonic that he had a problem with every aspect of the show related to Freemasonry. So it eventually led to us breaking our, you know, partnership in the show. And he had been originally brought in as a co-host just to have somebody to talk to back and forth. And we'd have him do a report from the Pacific Rim and in Hawaii and you know, all this. And he couldn't get over the Freemasonry thing. You know, he didn't want me to stay Freighter X. He wanted me to come out to my real name. He hated the name Middle Chamber. That was the original name that I chose, but he wanted to do, you know, Radio Free Humanity.
So,
I only bring it up because it's a good point that it was a friction that was right away with the conspiracy movement, because he was constantly trying to establish his legitimacy with the listeners, independent of me coming out as this active Freemason talking about Freemasonry and talking about trying to convey the positive side to people, you know?
Right. It's like there, you know, so many people want to say, you can't, there's no positive side here. What are you talking about? You know, you're defending
bad.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Well, secrecy is bad, I think, in governments and, like, you know, behind closed door dealings with big banks and governments and leaders and all that. That is bad. But inside of an organization where everybody, you know, joins and they all agree to go, you know, by certain rules of conduct, and they want to engage in ancient rituals that they're interested in learning about or being involved in, there's nothing wrong with the concept of secrecy if you look at it from the practical application of mystery traditions. But that's a whole other conversation. The fact of the matter is that in our society, you know, we've all heard John F. Kennedy say the secrecy speech, and I get chills when I hear him say it too, and I think that he's making good points. But I think he's talking about, you know, governments and leaders of people, you know, and what,
yeah,
I'm talking
that's
about.
That's so funny. No, I apologize. I don't mean to cut you off. It's just so funny. I dedicated a large, a few page sort of tangent in the book I'm writing. I sort of digress from the point to address that speech because I feel like that speech is, in my opinion, misunderstood. Because so many conspiracy crowds, and I really hope you understand, I don't mean that like as a derogatory thing. I'm just saying, like, whenever I've seen that, you know, sort of two sentences pulled out of that speech, used over and over and over again, and I tried something where I wrote, I was actually talking about the Morgan Affair, and I was comparing the Morgan Affair and JFK's speech, and I just gave the two lines that every conspiracy website pulls out about JFK, those two lines of that speech. And I just put it next to the Morgan Affair, and then I didn't address it again for another chapter. I wanted to sort of, like, show you this is how you could think incorrectly. And my wife read it, and we were talking about it, and she's like, oh, well, when JFK says about the secret societies, and I was like, yeah, you see, that's not what he's saying. I was like, thank you. I'm glad that I proved my point, is that it's misleading. If you actually read the full text of his speech, and I could tell you, just if anyone is interested in looking it up, I think it's worth doing. It's April 27th, 1961. It's called The President and the Press, Address Before the American Newspaper Publishers Association. You just Google, you know, President and the Press, April 27th, 1961, JFK. You'll find the full transcript. bear in mind, he's talking to newspaper publishers. He's talking to media outlets. And what he's saying, I'm going to pull another two lines out of it that no one addresses. If you don't mind, I really don't mean to do that, but I just think that's so interesting that you brought that up. Here's two lines that he also says. He's bear in mind, he's talking to newspapers, and he says, in time of clear and present danger, the courts have held that even the privileged rights of the First Amendment must yield to the public's need for national security. If you are awaiting a finding of clear and present danger, then I can only say that the danger has never been more clear and the presence has never been more imminent. What is he saying? He's saying the government...
We may have to suspend the First Amendment rights now.
Yeah, he's saying the government wants secrecy. We're going to do some secret stuff. Don't talk about it. It's not, he's not revealing secret societies.
And he's not like saying, he's apologizing for secrecy. It's an apologetic stance for secrecy.
Right. He says, I know everyone thinks secrecy is bad, but listen, I need to do some stuff that I can't tell you about. That's basically what he's saying. And I think, before I interrupted you, you were making an excellent point. There's a gentleman, Kyle Hunt, who was in Sync Book One. I heard him say once, I don't know, we were talking, and he said, he thought that the reason that a lot of conspiracy websites, that he thought it was actually a conspiracy within the conspiracy, that the reason they attack secret societies is because it's actually a mind game to make you think secrecy is bad, you should want to give up your privacy. Why does everyone go on Facebook and reveal everything? Because we're constantly told secrecy is bad, secrecy is bad. The distinction should be that privacy for the individual is what we're supposed to protect. Privacy for shady governments is not what we're supposed to protect. So when we hold up, in my opinion, when we hold up JFK as the guy who says, hey, look, you know, he's exposing that there's, we don't like secret societies, you know, the very word secrecy is repugnant, you know, in a free and open society, you know, totally. Blah, blah, blah. But he's not saying, hey, let's go expose secret societies. He's not saying, hey, there's a conspiracy by secret societies. He's saying, I know you don't like that kind of stuff, but guess what? I'm going to do some stuff, and I'd appreciate it if you didn't print it. To me, it's the opposite of what we're constantly being told the message of that speech is.
But so common. I mean, they do that all the time, you know. I mean, and when he refers to times at war when they suspended First Amendments and stuff, he's referring to Lincoln, to the Civil War.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that's what they did. There was no more habeas corpus, no more civil rights. I mean, it was like, okay, we're at war. Everything's out the window now.
Yeah,
you know,
Lincoln's another guy who, you know, we're constantly told he's the great liberator. He freed the slaves. Bullshit. He was an emperor. He suspended all the rights of the people to maintain the empire. That's not something to admire.
Yeah, if you certain researchers out there can map out for you exactly how he became the CEO of the United States of America Corporation. You know what I mean? At that point, we're all just little parts of the, you know, human resources department. So, but, you know, that's why we've really got to wrap this up. But I wanted to... say that, you know, just to let your listeners know, if you really want to look at, you know, the other side of government, the countries, nations, personal sovereignty versus government fascism, look at the work of Dean Clifford. And his work is on Time for Truth is the website, I think, timefortruth.com, I believe. But if you just type in Dean Clifford, I think he's got his own too, deanclifford.com. And it's Dean C. Clifford. There's another Dean Clifford that's not who he is, but he talks about sovereignty, and he talks about how, you know, we're America is not what we've been led to believe. You know, in America, we're told, you know, that we live in this country, you know, United States of America, right? But his exposition on the reality that our governments are merely corporate entities using our maps, the maps of our nations, as their business market regions. And yeah. that the, you know, the fact that, you know, we are in a complete state of anarchy right now. People who say, like, oh, you want to overthrow the government, you want anarchy, you want chaos. Guess what? We're in a complete state of chaos right now. We're in a state of lawlessness where governments, corporations, cops, judges, lawyers, bankers all break the law. They all flaunt the law. They, everyone's corrupt. Everyone's lying and cheating. The only grand call, the saber rattle of the businessman nowadays is, you know, will I win if I do that? Will I profit? It's not, is it right or wrong? It's like, will I profit? And that's it. It's all about profit, you know. And we're through the looking glass. We're up is down and right is left, black is white. You know, the general population is addicted to drugs while fighting a war on drugs against a few select plants. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like an our movement, mapped out by Dean Clifford, is a truly a restoration of law and order in the world. This system that we all live in is not ours. They, the bankster, thug, power elite, scumbags, built it for themselves. This system, you know, they built it for themselves thousands of years ago. It has a complete life of its own, and elites merely capitalize on it. Like you said, sometimes it's just running on autopilot, you know, while like one elite family is rising to power and like maybe there's nobody in charge for a while. But then they get into the map room and, you know, they figure out how to get there, and then they take the, you know, take the helm. And they start taking it over whatever fall they want to take us over. But, you know, we need to build a system for our own benefit. And I believe we are already, even if it's just ideologically, we're becoming the breakaway society, you know, that we fear that the elite have already done to us. Well, let's become the breakaway, you know, this non-compliance, you know what I mean? Vote non-compliance 2012. None of the above, people, you know?
Amen.
But I really appreciate you having me on, but I definitely got to get to bed, man. I got to go back and work in the shadow of the pyramid for the pharaohs in the gardens.
I'm so sorry. I didn't realize that it had gotten late. I know the schedule got all thrown off today. So thank you very, very, very much. I appreciate your time. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I'm sure you and I will talk again real soon, but just...
On the 28th, you'll be on my show in the Middle Chamber with Freighter X.
That's correct. If I don't speak to you before then, I guess I'll speak to you then. Thank you, everybody. And where can people tune in? What's the website?
MiddleChamberFX.com or AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And don't forget that I also have two blogs, FreighterX.blogspot.com and SynchroFiction.blogspot.com.
Awesome. Thank you, man. I appreciate your time tonight. All right, have a great night.
You too. Thank you so much, and I would love to come back on any time, and please extend my gratitude to Doug as well for being a gracious host.
Oh, will do. Thank you, my friend.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Fine. Well, some folks say they're going to hang him so high because you just can't do what he did. There's some things you just can't put in the minds of those kids. As we celebrate mediocrity, all the boys upstairs wanna see how much you'll pay for what you used to get for free. And there goes the last DJ who plays what he wants to play and says what he wants to say. There goes the last human voice. And there goes the last DJ. One of the world's most powerful radio voices. Sometimes it'll kinda come in, and I'll bust a move and remember how it was back then. And there goes the last DJ who plays what he wants to play and says what he wants to say. Hey, hey, hey. And there goes your.